Farming Programme with Araquip Steel Stockholders, Withambrook Industrial Estate Grantham, supplying the region for over 40 years.
Following last week when we talked about growing grass for turf, this week we look at pasture land and grazing.
If we want the soil to have the right nutrient profile, we want it, if you're going into a fully renovated seedbed, clean, fine, firm seedbed, all the same sorts of considerations.
Syngenta have a new fungicide which we'll talk about, and at Groundswell I saw a sign that said, talk to us about silicon. So I did.
It basically enters the plant and strengthens up the cell wall, so you get a plant that's more resistant to insect pressure, fungal pressure. You get a much stronger plant that's less easily damaged.
Sean's here with a look at the crops and some timely agronomy advice, and of course we'll see how the markets are faring.
The Week in Agriculture. This is the Farming Programme with Steve Orchard.
Good morning. Hope you've had a good week. Chilly for midsummer, isn't it? And continuing much the same this week by the looks of it. I'm Steve Orchard. In the news this week, the Badger Trust and Wild Justice are planning legal action aimed at stopping the government's supplementary badger cull programme. They're seeking a judicial review. Natural England has until July the 15th to respond. Supermarket Aldi is to introduce new stocking density requirements at its fresh chicken suppliers, giving the birds 20% more space than the industry standard. They joined Tesco, who announced the same last month. Farmers are needed for the next stage of a slug control programme. It's part of the first year of the wonderfully named Strategies Leading to Improved Management and Enhanced Resilience Against Slugs, or Slimers. It's a DEFRA-funded project with the goal of developing new solutions to tackle the arable pest. And if you're concerned about herbicide-resistant wild oats, now is a good time to collect samples and have them tested to help plan the most effective control strategies for this problem, which can get to unmanageable levels relatively quickly. Have a word with your agronomist for more. Last week we spoke with Alan from Tillers Turf about growing grass for turf. This week a little about doing the same for pasture and grazing. At Groundswell last week I met with Janet Montgomery, Agriculture Product Manager at Barenbrug.
Have we got any tips in terms of the ground, first of all, if we're preparing a field for growing grass for grazing?
Yeah, absolutely. And a lot of the same principles stand as for turf. We want the soil to have the right nutrient profile. We want it, if you're going into a fully renovated seedbed, clean, fine, firm seedbed, all the same sorts of considerations, because biologically the establishment of grasses is quite similar between turf and forage. But in the end, how you manage those things is quite different. But a lot of the preparation work is very similar.
Okay, mm-hmm. So is there a better type of soil? We need to look at drainage and that kind of thing, obviously.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Soil structure, the physical and chemical properties of soil are all very important. I'm sort of loath to say one soil is better than another, because where people are farming, they're stuck with what soils they have. So it's a matter of knowing what type of soil you have and what sort of management works best for that type of soil and how you interact best with that type, wherever you are, whatever type you have.
Certainly within Lincolnshire, we've got heathland, we've got some heavy soil. A lot of farms have a bit of both, mm-hmm. over the acres. Is there a better type of soil, if you've got the choice, mm-hmm. for growing grass on?
My own preference is something that's relatively free draining. I like some clay contents because there's moisture retention. It helps with the structure, but you don't want it to be too heavy either, where it becomes that really like sort of pottery clay type, which makes it very difficult for root structure to expand or for water to flow through properly. So I like a nice medium soil. If I can sit on the fence a bit there, if I have a nice balance of the three soil components, I'm very happy.
And if we were starting from scratch, is there a better seed to grow?
Perennial ryegrass is the most commonly sown forage species in the UK. Basically, wherever perennial ryegrass is suitable, it is the most suitable for pastoral agriculture, livestock agriculture, based on its profile of, you know, growth over the season, the amount of biomass it can produce in a year, the quality of that biomass. It is just such a suitable plant for our style, the UK style of pastoral agriculture.
A few months ago, we talked about going gently to start the season. Now, let's assume our farmer has done that. Mm-hmm. Here we are in the middle of summer.
Yep.
Different rules apply?
Yes, absolutely. We're in a hot couple of days here at Groundswell. The cold, wet spring seems a distant memory now. And so now what we're concentrating on, instead of, I mean, always soil structure preservation, but instead of trying to preserve soils from having wet compaction, grass growth rates will slow down when it's really hot, when there's lots of sunlight hours. And so just not going back in again too early, making sure the stage for cutting or grazing is correct rather than just the amount of days in between.
You've published a piece recently, Don't Forget Your Grass. Do you want to quickly summarize what that's all about?
I think that's basically the point, is just to remember that grasslands are such a resource in terms of the basis of pastoral agriculture. So we love the focus on biodiversity. We love biodiverse mixtures across space and across time on a farm, but just really to focus on the benefit of grassland as the basis of pastoral agriculture.
And nice to talk to you again face to face this time. So thanks for joining us on the Farming Programme.
Pleasure to have. Thank you.
Let's have a look at the other crops now. How are they doing? Is the weather what we need? Here's our crop doctor, independent agronomist Sean Sparling. Morning, Sean.
Yes, morning, Steve. Bit cooler then, nice drop of rain, but what we really need now is sunshine. Been precious few sunny days in the last seven. So, starting with winter barley, starting to change colour now and ripen. So, it's important to think about the need for pre-harvest weed control and canopy management. Call it desiccation if you want, but you're wrong. Glyphosate is not a desiccant. Its job pre-harvesting cereals is to kill off and crisp up the green weedy stuff in the base of these canopies to help harvest. That's what it's for. Plenty of fields, of course, this year with dodgy, thin patches in them, thanks to the wet weather of this season. And that's left us with a lack of crop competition in those areas and quite big areas of weeds starting to push through during the late spring after the herbicides we put on in the early spring at T1 ran out of steam. Also, plenty of crops where the herbicide programme hasn't gone according to plan at all this year because of wet last autumn, meaning the pre-ems didn't go on, or the continuing wet autumn that meant the early post-ems couldn't go on, or the windy or the wet, or the wet and windy conditions we've had throughout this spring, all of which have left us with significant broadleaf weed and grass weed burdens in some fields. I've never seen so many flushes of wild oats in a season. If that is the case for you, then pre-harvest glyphosate can be very, very useful and beneficial come harvest. So I know it's a bit early for the actual spraying bit, but now is the time to be thinking about where that glyphosate might be needed. Some contracts might prohibit you pre-harvest use of glyphosate, so always check that. And obviously, you cannot spray a seed crop with glyphosate. So if you're going to be home saving, map out the cleaner bits of the fields that aren't going to need spraying off. Where the glyphosate is required, then it should be applied when the grain falls below 30% moisture. That means the crop's physiologically ripe and it can't then translocate the glyphosate back up to the ear. It is literally a rule of thumb, because less than 30% moisture means the grain will hold the imprint of your thumbnail. Most spring barley crops in general looking quite well, a bit thin in places for all the reasons we went into, of course, last week. Far too many bits mould in, far too many bits put in too late. You know all the things I'm talking about. But in general, where they went in well and in good time, with the recent warmer weather and the regular supply of showers suiting them, look just like the spring wheat, they look pretty good in general. Decent doses of decent fungicides are generally given decent levels of disease control, as ever. But net blotch, rhynchosporium, mildew, still quite easily visible at the bottom of the canopy. And where you've got crops that are at or past the awns emerging stage and they've only had one fungicide, it might be worth thinking about a T2 even on these later drill crops, because the disease risk is still very high in these weather conditions. Some good products to choose from, plenty of them, all capable, all broad spectrum options where the disease is active. So speak to your advisor and just watch the growth stage cutoff timings, not just for fungicides but also for herbicides, because a lot of late cleavers and these never-ending flushes of wild oats may well now be too late to do anything about. Spring oats, pretty clean in general, but with the ears now pushing through, a final fungicide should be considered if it hasn't already gone on. A mix of tebuconazole or prothioconazole with a strob such as azoxystrobin, that's going to give very good rust control and protection going forward, and pretty inexpensive as well. Sugar beet. Most crops have now met across the row and most plants have got more than 16 leaves, so much less susceptible now to virus yellows moving in. As I said last week, the later drillings and the more backward crops, though, may still need to be monitored for these green aphids if they have fewer than 14, 16 leaves per plant. Ladybirds, lacewings, wasps, hoverflies, ants, spiders, all increasing again in the last 7 days. So hopefully they're going to provide enough effective control of both the green and the black aphids from now onwards for us. Black aphids continue continue to increase in numbers out there, by the way. 100 black aphids per plant is your threshold on a healthy crop of beet. More than 1 in 10 plants colonised in the more backward crops before it's worth even thinking about applying an insecticide. And hopefully those legions of ladybirds and other predators are going to control them for us. Virus yellow is showing up in crops, though. Mostly odd scattered plants across fields where the odd aphid fed on it before either the cruiser or a foliar insecticide norped it. Hopefully these virus levels will stay pretty much as low as they are now, just odd bits about, but too late to worry about it anyway. Caterpillar damage also quite obvious in some of these beet fields. Odd holes in leaves, up to quite severe damage in small areas in a few fields. Most likely to be the silver Y moth. They're big brown moths about an inch long with a silver Y on the shoulder of the wing and big fat green caterpillars. Sugar beet, though, has got an amazing capacity to recover from severe leaf loss. We saw that both in 1996 and again in 2003 when we had really bad years before. So do hold your nerve. If you're seeing holes rather than defoliation like we saw back then in particular, then 5 caterpillars per plant is your threshold. And I'm finding nothing like that. But it does always look a lot worse than it is. Fascinating little moths, though. They migrate up from the Canary Islands and the Mediterranean Basin in late spring and they start appearing in fields about now. And in both 1996 and 2003, 5 weeks or so after the caterpillars had left the crop, the leaf mass was pretty much back to pre-moth levels and the yields were largely ineffective in many of the untreated areas too, in many sites. So even after significant grazing, that was the case. So do speak to BBRO and to your advisor and try and hold your nerve. But if thresholds are met and if leaf damage is severe, pyrethroids are pretty much all you've got to control caterpillars. But if you do put a pyrethroid on, you're going to lose all those lovely predators and that's going to hand over the baton on to the green and the black aphids. So there is a balance to be had here. Hailstorms, we all know they'll strip a beet crop of their leaves, but they rarely affect the yields, particularly if you're lifting later and these crops are going to get time to recover that leaf area. First signs of disease as well starting to appear in sugar beet, but we'll talk about that next week. And oilseed rape swathing and pre-harvest glyphosate timings looming. Just check the middle pods. If there are more brown seeds than green, then you're about bang on. And glyphosate's going to take 2 to 3 weeks to do its job anyway, so do factor that in. So wheat's drilled in the middle of September have now been in the ground nearly 10 months. So we're starting to see things change out here. And let's see what the next 7 days bring.
Thanks as ever, Sean. More from the fields with some important agronomy advice this time next week. Still to come, we look at the markets. There's a new fungicide from Syngenta and we'll talk silicon next.
The Farming Programme with Araquip Steel Stockholders, Withambrook Industrial Estate Grantham. For all your steel needs, call their friendly experts.
Walking around Groundswell last week, I saw a sign that said, "Talk to us about silicon." So I did, with Amstel Agro's consultant Dan Gulliver. Dan, why should a farmer use silicon, and what for?
Well, there's a lot of reasons why a farmer should be looking at silicon. It basically enters the plant and strengthens up the cell wall. So you get a plant that's more resistant to insect pressure, fungal pressure. You get a much stronger plant that's less easily damaged. A healthier crop, better yields, more drought resistant. And I think the main thing is, if you've got farmers that are looking to reduce insecticide and fungicide use, which most farmers are now, I think, it's an alternative. It's not an insecticide, it's totally safe to use, and then once the crop's been harvested, the silicon goes back into the soil and is available for the next crop.
Where does the silicon come from?
Well, it's present in most soils anyway, but whether or not it's in a form that's available to the plant is a different matter. So sandier soils will have silicon present anyway. The harder kind of clay soils, not so much. So you can get your soil tested and then make a decision on how much you want to use. Our source is an ortho-silicic acid. Now, most farmers will be familiar with potassium silicate, which they then have to break down with citric acid. And if they don't do it right, or they don't do it in the right order, it can block sprayers. Your contractors won't be too happy with you. They'll ask you to come and clean it all out for them, which I've heard several times over the last couple of days. This is basically suspended in glycol.
So how does your silicon get applied?
You apply as a foliar. So you spray it onto the crop. You can add it with your fertiliser. If you're going around with a herbicide, you can put it in that as well. You put it into the tank first, and then you add your other elements on top of that. Our ortho-silicic acid is 100% bioavailable to the plant, so whatever you're spraying on is going into the leaf, Potassium silicate, depending on how it's mixed, can sometimes only be 25% available.
And when would you apply it?
It depends on what you're using it for. If you're using it as a biostimulant, depending on the crop, you could apply it T0, 1 and 2. We're running some trials at the moment with winter wheat where we're trying it, you know, single application at 0, 0, 1, 0, 1, 2, 3. We've got farms that are trialing it at the moment as an alternative to insecticide on OSR. So if they're suffering from flea beetle, which a lot of farmers are at the moment, and very early application or one or two applications with the silicon will strengthen the wall of the cell and make it more difficult for the beetle to get into the crop.
Cost?
We're looking at £15 a hectare per application. So that's half a litre per hectare. So if you're doing one application, you're £15 a hectare. If you're doing three applications, it's 45 a hectare. And the more extreme the climate conditions get, the more you'll see the results of it, because that cell wall is going to retain turgidity. So if you're going into drought conditions, your crop is going to stay healthier, basically, and lose less water.
And water has been something we've not been short of over the last 6 months or so. How does it cope when we've got heavy rainfall?
Well, you get a stronger plant, so you'll have improved rooting on there as well. So you should have a better foundation for your crop to get you through a wet period.
All right, Dan, where should somebody go if they want to know more?
If they want to have a look at our website, amstelagro.com. We'll have some ADAS and NIOP trial data up towards the end of the year and the beginning of next year.
All right, Dan, thank you very much indeed.
Cheers, Steve. Thank you.
Syngenta were very active at cereals recently, as always, with their sprayer area, and they've got a new authorised fungicide, an addition to the Miravis family, Miravis Plus. Here's Lincolnshire Area Manager Henrietta Wells to tell us more.
So Miravis Plus, that is the name of the straight active, so adepidin on its own, that's the active ingredient. And then Miravis Era is the box that's available to farmers, so that is 15 litres of adepidin and 5 litres of PTZ, so ERA, our prothioconazole. It's been a while since we've had a new SDHI fungicide on the market, so growers have been waiting with bated breath really for this product. It's been in trial for many years with distribution, and yeah, it's been quite a step change really in control on farm.
And it's particularly wheat and barley, is it?
Yeah, wheat and barley, and that's what we've done all the work on. That's this year is the main focus. We are looking at using the product on veg in the next couple of years, spring barley, spring wheat, oilseed rape. But on the label, we continue to do work in it to bring the technical information that's needed really to support that.
And what's it most effective against then? Let's talk wheat first of all.
Yeah, so with wheat, adepidin, so Miravis, is really effective on Septoria. It brings a game-changing control on Septoria, which has been fantastic. This year has been a really high pressure Septoria year. When you're looking at the varieties on the recommended list, we've got varieties that are sitting about a 5-6 for Septoria as standard, really. And then when you're looking at crops like barley, we've got step changes in Rhynchosporium, Ramularia, which is really good to see. Previously, the only product that really would have been used to control Ramularia is prothioconazole. So when you're thinking about the difference between prothioconazole and an SDHI product, it's fantastic really to see that control.
When would this be applied?
So T2 application would be applied. So yeah, you're looking at getting that control onto leaf 2 really, just as flag leaf is appearing.
And as you say, some extensive trials before this has been released. So what kind of things were being seen in the trials?
Oh, I've had some agronomists saying to me, Miravis is like green paint. So we've got a really good photo from NIOP tag trials, to independent work that we've done over at AB, obviously local to us, which is great. My growers love to see local data. We've got a NDVI image from up above, and you can see them adepidin plots are bright green compared to the other plots. So yeah, it's like it's a real visual benefit we've seen. But then when you put in a combine through it, we've put Sampo combines and got the trials data back, we're seeing 0.3, 0.5 tonne a hectare yield increase with using the product. So, yeah, all good all round.
So, as you say, Henrietta, this is available now. It's obviously being proved to be effective, which is great news. Where could a farmer or an agronomist go for more information?
So anyone is welcome to contact me as their local area manager. So Henrietta Wells, more than happy to give people more technical information. And if not, I'm supporting your on-farm agronomists. So yeah, and in terms of open days, keep an eye out on the Syngenta website to come and see us look at plots.
Henrietta, thanks for joining us on the Farming Programme this morning.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
The Farming Programme.
Market reports.
Starting with livestock and keeping it in the family. Henrietta's other half, Louth Market auctioneer Ed Middleton. Good morning, Ed.
Good morning, Steve. Just a very small seasonal entry of prime cattle this week, with heifers all in average 269.5 pence per kilo, and steers all in average 271.4. Top price in the pence per kilo and the pounds per head in the steers were F. Wallace & Sons of Biscathorpe at 289.5 pence per kilo, and in the pounds per head at £1,679.10. And in the heifers, top pence per kilo and pounds per head were J.E. Thilby of Gainsborough at 269.5 pence per kilo, and in the pounds per head, £1,522.68. Just a few call and OTM cattle today. Topped for W.R. Taylor & Co. of Great Carlton at £1,286.25, or 171.5 pence per kilo. On to the sheep. This week we had an SQQ of 310.2 pence per kilo and an all-in average pounds per head of £136.12. July's arrived and this week came with a falling trade on the previous week, looking like every other market in the country has followed, with 500 lambs forward. Top pen last week came from Scrillsbury Farms at Horncastle at 170, with other pens at 156 and 150, with their run of 56 lambs averaging £148.96. Topping the pence per kilo, Emma Benge of Horsington topped at 361 pence per kilo. Moving on to the cull ewes, very mixed bag again this week with an average of £85.03. Typical entry with just over 100 forward. Top spot went to Emma Benge of Horsington at 157 for a Texel ewe. Suffolk Cross ewes from Shaw Brothers of Binbrook sold to 148 and mules to 102 for S. Cosgrove of Haynton. I'm Edward Middleton, auctioneer at Louth Livestock Market.
Thanks, Ed. And how are the grain markets this week? Open Fields' Alice Killam. Morning, Alice.
Good morning, Steve. Quite a bit seems to have happened since last week in the grain markets. Friday evening brought another bearish report from our friends in the US, but with a feeling that this market has perhaps got a little overdone on the downside, we had a good couple of days in the UK to kick off the week. Just small movements, but this consolidated a move up in the last few minutes of trading on Monday, both in France and in the UK. We were watching out to see a breakthrough of the Chartist important 200 number on the NOV futures. The bulls like me were hoping that we see it trading through and then beyond this number, as that would provide us with a selling opportunity once again. Midweek, we saw this advance, but it was only brief, with a dip below once again. To the USDA numbers from last Friday then, which were much anticipated and has in the past moved prices around significantly. There's two aspects to this report: the US stocks, which were higher than the trade expected, and the US June prospective plantings for the forthcoming season. The important one is corn, and yes, this too was higher than the trade was expecting. Some bearish numbers on the face of it, but funds are already almost record short again, with some of the early crops off around the world, which would fly in the face of such optimism, how much more bearish they want to become. The market dropped then, but it could have been much, much worse for us. A good example of what some bad news stories can do: the new crop rapeseed market, which has rallied this week. Matif finished last week 15.25 up and has started in a similar vein this week too. The market being supported by poor harvest yield and oil content reports from France. One of the key analysts cut its forecast for all the main oilseed crops in the European Union. In monthly estimates, Strategy Grains pegged the EU 2024 rapeseed harvest at 17.8 million metric tonnes, down from 17.94 million in June and 10.6% lower than last year's harvests, due to lower forecasts in Germany, Romania and the Baltic countries after unfavourable growing conditions during May and June. We'll see what happens here shortly when the first rapeseed is cut, but sometimes all you need is a good old-fashioned poor crop story to change the narrative. Whilst we wait for this in the wheat and barley market, we are back to trading the day-to-day. I mentioned earlier about the 200 mark for NOV futures, but is this even going to help old crop? Not really, to be honest. Mills are very slow at taking what they've bought, and the fresh sales that are being made are indicating a level of panic selling, almost at any cost, which is not helping the rest of us. Because of the market dynamics and carry into new crop, anything that can be carried into September or October practically will make sense financially, though I fully appreciate that this may not suit everyone. For old crop that needs moving then, just keep going. And for new crop, with premiums added, we might be close to some target levels once again. Let's hope that this very slight positive tone continues. Expect some currency move in the coming days with our general election and the French go back to the polls on Sunday for a second go. This could look a lot different this time next week. So some guide prices. Feed wheat, July, 175 to 185. September, 185 to 195. November, 190 to 200, with Group 1 milling premium still holding to 60 to 70 pounds. Feed barley, September, 155 to 165. November, 160 to 170. Oilseed rape, September, circa 400. November, 405 to 415. As usual, please do call for firm values.
Thanks, Alice.
The Farming Programme. 5-day forecast.
Well, a typical English summer week. Plenty of cloud, temperatures not getting above upper teens Celsius, winds mostly light and variable, and more rain on the way midweek. Well, that's it for this week. Hope to see you at the Great Yorkshire Show. I'll be there on Wednesday. Drop me a message on X if you're going, at Farming Show. Next week, we'll look ahead to Farm Safety Week and, of course, the rest of the week in agriculture. Oh, and have you said hello to Rayo yet? It's our new app for music playlists, radio, features and the farming programme. Free to download, very clever but easy to use. You download the app, it's Rayo, R-A-Y-O, in the App Store, and you can listen whenever you want. Pause, rewind, listen again, etc. So say hello to Rayo and just search farming. I'm Steve Orchard. Until next time, have a great week.
The Farming Programme with Araquip Steel Stockholders, Withambrook Industrial Estate Grantham, BSI ISO 9001 accredited.